Hey, we bring in a good friend of the show, Pat, and you enjoy talking to him as well as
sure.
I do. That is Barry Bloom. He is the senior writer, really, for MLB.com. He covers all the major stories around Major League Baseball. Did some great books on Larry Boa, lived down in San Diego for a while, now based in Arizona. But, boy, when you want to find out what's going on in baseball, you talk to him.
Yeah.
The commissioner, Bud Selig, is on his farewell tour. Supposedly, this is it for him. But there's some internal stuff going on as far as choosing a next commissioner, which is now all of a sudden, you know, the king and the political stories and Julius Caesar and
That's
Brutus
right.
and all that.
Yeah.
A lot going on. So we know how to get the scoop on it. Barry Bloom, welcome to the show.
Hey, Barry.
Good. I wish I had information for you, but I don't.
You do. We're gonna cross-examine you and get it out of you.
Marty says you do, Barry.
We know you got it.
Yeah.
All right. First of all, what's the status of Bud Selig now heading into the sort of the twilight of this year? Is he going, is he leaving for sure?
Well, I don't think anything is certain. I mean, he keeps saying that he's gone for sure. But until, the door closes, I think the contract, his last day is January 24th. And on that day, when he walks out the door, I'll believe it.
What's the process, Barry? I know there's league meetings, MLB meetings last week. What is the process now of picking a new commissioner? How, at least, are they showing it on the table right now?
Well, what they finally did was, with the owners coalescing, because there has been no formal process, what they did was they put together a seven-man ownership committee that was set up by the executive council to make recommendations to the executive council on who might be the new commissioner. So really, they're just starting this process. There's no, anointed successor to Bud as there was in, say, the NBA, where David Stern had set Adam Silver up to be the successor for many years. And when he told the owners, this is the guy who's following me, they basically approved him. There's none of that in baseball. And so they're going very late to the table on this, trying to do a national search for a commission. That's why I wonder whether or not they're going to be able to get it done within a six-month period before Bud's contract expires.
You know, you look back in the history of baseball commissioners, of course, you have the great Judge Landis, and you go further, the Happy Chandler, who oversaw the integration of baseball.
Okay.
Fort Frick, a former newspaper paperman. General Eckert they had at one point. Bowie Kuhn, who
yeah.
took on the unions and didn't know what he was doing and ended up really messing everything up. Peter Uberoth, who ended up getting involved with all the labor issues.
My good friend Faye Vincent.
Faye Vincent, yeah. who really told the other owners to stick it, basically, and they got rid of him.
Yep.
And, of course, Bart Giamatti in the middle of that, who is a very strong, powerful literary commissioner as well. And then, of course, you go to Bud Selig, who is a former owner. Where do you see the office going? Is it a one-man office? Is it someone from their ranks? Or do they go outside? Or do they go, to a trilateral commission? Jerry Reinsdorf has a lot to say about this. And, again, the power brokers of baseball go back to Walter O'Malley in those days. You go back to the Cardinal owners in the 20s and 30s, the Wrigleys. And, Barry, just bring us up to date where you think this thing is going. And a little bit of the history of it.
I think as you went through it, there's an understanding there that, there was a succession. I mean, Fort Frick was a league president before he was the commissioner. And so he was an inside guy who was, made the commissioner. Then they made the mistake of hiring Eckert, which was a disaster. And they followed that up with Kuhn, for some reason, in the Hall of Fame. And but even with Uberoth, they went out in one of these searches to get a CEO-type commissioner. Giamatti was nationally president when he became commissioner. Faye Vincent was his deputy commissioner when Giamatti suddenly died. And then Bud, basically was part of the palace coup that got rid of Vincent. So, I mean, there has been sort of a succession situation here, except for that period of time where you went from Frick to, Eckert, Uberoth, in that period, Kuhn. And so, you're in a situation now where you know, you get like names being thrown out, like Iger, the head of Disney. Is that really what the owners want? I mean, it's an interesting dynamic because most of these owners, in one way or form, were brought in during the Selig administration. Now, Steinbrenner and I think Reinsdorf, maybe the only two who were not. You know, the Steinbrenner situation is a much different one now with George having passed away and the kids running the team. So Reinsdorf really is the only old-time stalwart owner from pre-Buzz. And, you know, he's always had a lot to say in it about this. And Bud has given him a lot of rein to have say in, you know, having talked to Reinsdorf extensively about this, you know, and being an owner under David in the NBA with the Bulls and an owner with the White Sox under Selig are diametrically different. And Reinsdorf has told me he enjoyed being a baseball owner, or has enjoyed being a baseball owner much more because Bud has allowed him to be hands-on and David was autocratic. He said it wasn't a condemnation of David, it was just different leadership style. Now, Bud is a coalescer. And so you're not going to get somebody in there who suddenly is going to be dictating stuff to the owners again because it's not going to work. And then when Bud steps down, if it's this year, next year, all of these chips that he has with these owners are going to all go away. Like I said to Lou Wolf last winter during the playoffs, last fall during the playoffs, I don't know what you're worried about. He doesn't want to call a question on the A's move to San Jose, which he always could have, but he didn't want to do it while Bud was there. With Bud gone, whether it's Manfred or who else, Lou could call that question and see if the owners will vote to overtopple the Giants and all their problems and move the team and find out whether that team can go to San Jose. These are the things that are going to happen, and I think it's going to be a very, very trying process for them to figure it out. I had one owner tell me, one club president said, there's not one person in the world right now who could get 23 votes to be the commissioner. And I believe him. I think this is a long, drawn-out process now that has started very late.
Well, boy, you know, Pat and I were talking about it. Some of the names that are kicked around, and one, of course, I teased it on our break, Larry Bear, president and CEO of the Giants. That name came up. What do you make of that?
You know, I make the same thing out of it as, you know, Stan Kasten and Adonasio of the Brewers. I think they're just throwing names are just floating right now. I think, you know, and all due respect to those three guys, I was teasing Adonasio about it. I said, you know, basically, you know, you're the compromise candidate on the 55th ballot. And Laurel Prieb is the compromise candidate on, like, 58.
If Laurel Prieb becomes a commissioner, I'm moving to Arizona. I'm going to be in his office.
Right. So, I mean, you know,
That's Bud Selig's son-in-law, by the way.
I love Larry, but I don't think he's going to be the next commissioner. You know, and that's not saying he wouldn't do a great job at doing it. I just don't think it's going to be from those kind of mid-ranks, you know. You know, Bud was a long-time team owner, you know, when he 20 years when he became the commissioner, the acting commissioner in 91, 92. So, I mean, this is a guy who moved the franchise, filled the void in Milwaukee once the Braves had left, you know, somehow coaxed a bankrupt team out of Seattle and into Milwaukee, something that probably couldn't happen in this day and age. And, you know, he was very firmly entrenched among his fellow owners at the time. And, you know, I think there's a lot of respect. But I think just from that one thing alone, I mean, you know, you have, I think, a schism within baseball about what to do about the A's and the Giants. There are some owners who say, you know, why are we constantly floating the A's with revenue sharing so they can kick our butt every year and go to the playoffs on our money? When if they move to San Jose, they'll have more dollars and they'll become closer to a middle of the pack, maybe upper pack, revenue-sharing distributor rather than taker. And so you have that part of ownership of things. Let them move that San Jose. And then you have the others who are agreeing with the Giants. So, I mean, there's no – and since they're right in the middle of all that, I find it hard to believe that, you know, either Lou or Larry would be commissioner in the upcoming next years.
All right, one more question for you, Barry Bloom, on this subject. Could they have a trilateral commission like Joe Torre in charge of baseball, a labor guy in charge of labor, and someone else in charge of media? Because it's all very, very big money issues to the ball clubs.
Well, yeah, I don't think that's beyond the realm of possibility. You know, I think our guy, Bob Bowman, who's the CEO over at BAM, and now has been given control of the MLB Network, too. I think that, you know, they put him in place because he's done such a great job growing that side of the media business and making the owners a lot of money. And he's as progressive a businessman as there is in the sport. What he's done with the Major League Baseball app and working with Apple on the stuff, he's created one of the greatest used sports apps in the world. And now he's been tasked with, like, bringing the network along. You know, and Manfred's done a great job along the way working with the union and keeping labor peace. And, you know, Torre is 70, and I think he would be great as, you know, the baseball component of this, because he's a guy in his later years of managing. He does what he did then. He basically has good people working below him, and he defers a lot of responsibility to those people and lets them make decisions. And those decisions are made even below him, he takes responsibility because it's his office. So, you know, I don't think it's beyond the pale to have that happen, but I'm not sure if that's a developing compromise that you're going to get in 6 months. I'm just really interested to see how fast this process gets moving within 6 months because, you know, you have ownership meetings in November, and, of course, they could call a special ownership meeting on this any time if they wanted to. So just the fact that you have the last quarterly meeting of the year in November, you have to have something on the table by then, don't you? Because the first one of next year is in Phoenix right before Bud steps down. So there's got to be somebody in place between November and January to fit in. You can't make this decision on January 15th, I wouldn't think. But, you know, this is all, you know, what's going to go on internally. And, you know, really, I'm happy with any direction the owners go at this point. I just think, you know, they pretty much know what they're doing, and Bud has done a great job. I mean, I could do chapter and verse on that, and it wouldn't kill me at all. I'd love to see Bud stick around for another year.
Boy, what a story,
you know,
huh?
It's where it is.
What a story. Yeah. What a story, Pat. Go ahead.
Barry Bloom, MLB.com. Hey, listen, Barry, I know I'm asking you to kind of look into your crystal ball here, but down the road, how are folks going to, especially the fans, going to look back on Bud Selig's legacy? Are they going to smile at it? Are they going to frown on it? I know the game is a swim in cash, but under Bud Selig's watch, baseball has been surpassed by football as America's pastime. How do you think we'll look back at Bud Selig's tenure?
Oh, really? You really think that during Bud's football went past baseball long before Bud?
Yeah, you asked an interesting question, Pat.
Well, it's the truth, right?
That's your assumption.
Well, the TV ratings would suggest that NFL and college have surpassed baseball.
You have to define what's a national pastime.
Okay. What the National Football League was able to do because of the betting on the sport and the Sunday games is they made each one into an event, and they sold all their TV centrally to get an even field for all the teams to basically compete on. And that started in the 1960s.
Okay.
Now, what they were able to do is on top of that, they turned the Super Bowl into the most watched television program in the country. And it doesn't matter who plays in it anymore. You have a holiday on Super Bowl Sunday, and no sport is even going to get close to that.
Right.
But saying that, football is a $9 billion industry, and so is baseball now, too.
Okay.
So evidently, Bud did something right along the way to get that sport to that place. And baseball is an everyday sport with a lot of viewership through a whole multitude of means, the smallest of which being the iPhone that I'm sitting here talking to you on now. I can turn you off when I'm done and turn on the Giant game on my iPhone.
Right.
You know, this is an amazing thing for the day-to-day baseball fan who just loves this stuff. So, you know, I think that's all part of his, you know, legacy.
Yeah.
I think the other part of his legacy is that, he's socially liberal and he created the whole Jackie Robinson mystique. At his 50th anniversary of breaking the color barrier, Bud honored Robinson and retired the number. And at that time, nobody in the game, including the baseball's African-Americans, really had an idea who Jackie Robinson was. And he started an education process, which goes on every year. And people complain to me, oh, do we have to listen to this story again? Yes. It has to be re-educated every year. Plus, he used that. He spent money on the RBI program. He spent money on urban development with these academies. There's like four or five of them in the country. The biggest producer is in Compton. I mean, they spent an inordinate amount of money trying to re-engage African-American fans and athletes back into the game. Has it worked? You know, I think the numbers, you can skew them any way you want. But I can tell you this, if he hadn't done it, there would be no interest in the game right now from that quarter of the society. And that, to me, I've covered a lot of it. And to me, in the end, in his legacy, that's the thing I'm most proud of Bud Selig, because no other commissioner did it. He didn't have to do it, and he did.
Boy, beautiful. Barry, thank you so much. See, and Barry said, I don't know anything. And 15 minutes later,
come on,
he educated the world about everything.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Right on, Barry.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right. Barry Bloom, MLB.com.
Hey, Bud,
he said he didn't know anything.
Bud Selig's legacy is going to be pretty complicated because of all the great things that he did that Barry just mentioned. But he also had the steroid era.
Yeah.
And we know all that. We know all about that here in the Bay Area. So I wonder how fans are going to look back on Selig.
Well, let's ask him. 808 KMBR.
Yeah.